Who is the most powerful man in the nation, Rich Uncle Mal, the PM, coming to us live, I believe, from North Melbourne today. Rich Uncle Mal, good morning.
Good morning to you. I am in North Melbourne. I feel like it might be a little bit of a communist stronghold here, but I'm I'm ploughing on regardless.
Hello, leader.
Okay, regardless, as they say.
First question today, Rich Uncle Mal. Has your mate, Christopher Pyne, got himself in some hot water?
Well, let me say this, Ed. Christopher and I have always had the greatest of respect for one another. He has been a terrific friend and ally. Remember, he knifed Tony for me.
Yes.
We've sought each other's counsel whilst riding public transport. And more importantly, he introduced me to house, trance and disco.
Did he?
I know. Pino can shake it politically and on the dance floor. That little guy has got something funky deep inside of him.
Rich Uncle Mal, will Australia get marriage equality? This is a big deal.
Well, Robbo, I'm glad you asked. Now that flat earthers like Corey Bernardi and Eric Abetz from Tasmania, Tassie, not the most forward-thinking people in the Federation, they've gone now, so marriage equality will happen. And like I've said before, I live in the strongest LGBTIQ electorate in Australia. You don't want to cross the gay mafia. They don't put a horse's head in your bed. You know what they put in your bed?
Well, I'd love to hear.
1,000-count cotton Egyptian sheets, which is so luxurious they feel threatening.
Now Malcolm, did you see Pino on Q&A last night, though?
Well, I thought old Pino clean. Pinus radiata, the pine cone, as I call him. Christoph did a terrific job.
Yeah.
But I was disturbed by how many close-ups of acne the ABC insisted on showing us. By jingo, there were some hideous actors out there last night. I felt like I was in year 10 again.
Oh.
There were some red-hot bulbs. I swear at one stage I saw a hummingbird flying in front of one guy's face.
Wowzers. That's
it
incredible.
Always like this, or if the Gen Y people let themselves go. Yeah. My goodness me. There were some real pustules.
Oh, don't.
Thank you.
The discussion was whether we can trust our pollies, so can we?
Well, no, not unless you're a wealthy, financially independent guy like me, who's beyond reproach. And probably won't double dip on travel expenses. I'm not some unionist munter, Robbo, or hippie with a straight haircut. I'm Malcolm Bly Turnbull, for Christ's sake. That's who I am. And you can't trust anybody else.
Bye, Rich Uncle Mal.
I just like
nice
to say
to
that Triple M rocks Grange, both the suburb and the drink.
Yes.
Doesn't it, though?
We should say as well, Mal, your mate Lawrence Mooney playing QPAC July 22nd.
What?
You can get your tickets via our Facebook page.
It.
Have you seen that show, Rich Uncle Mal?
Well, I've seen the cheap impersonator that is Lawrence Mooney, and for a pinko, he's not a bad guy. I sometimes let him drive me around in the Bentley.
Good on you,
mate. He always stinks of booze, though.
Doesn't he, though?
Hound of a man. Good on you.
I want to talk about driving.
Okay.
They're all on the roads a lot, and I want to talk about elderly drivers. Marto, it's been a while. I don't think you've said this while Robin's been with us. It's one of my favourite theories of yours. I think it's actually probably...
No, I don't know your theory on older drivers.
Okay,
what is it?
You know how every... I reckon there's one a month. Maybe let's say one every 2 months. There's an elderly driver drives into the through the window of a shopping a shop or a shopping centre or whatever.
They hit the accelerator instead of the brake.
That's right. What would happen... Therefore, every driver over the age of 65 should be driving a manual and none of those accidents would happen. You've got to take automatic vehicles away from the elderly and they can't drive anymore. If they drive automatics, if they can still manage to use a clutch, they can keep driving.
I think
if they
65's
can't
a bit harsh. Like maybe 70, 75.
Well, let's actually, this might help that because...
I want to ask you why. Why not 65? If you can't manage to push a clutch in with your little foot, you shouldn't be
65,
driving.
65, you know, people have only just retired. I think you start to compromise.
Well, start strengthening your legs if you've retired.
Okay. Righto.
You heard the man.
The sermon from the mount. Okay.
Okay. Oh, because no one wants to take their... Why are we talking about this anyway? I haven't seen one of these happen this week.
Because I saw the oldest driver I've ever seen 2 days ago. Mm. He's 96 years old.
Oh dear.
He drives a brand new Land Rover in which he drives his wife around. His name is Prince Philip. Prince Philip got it.
Oh dear.
Prince Philip got out of hospital.
He's been in hospital, yeah.
Yeah, he's just been in hospital, got out.
Oh.
And they were going to a carriage driving competition. How ironic is that, right? Which is how he normally gets around.
Yeah, was encouraged.
And he goes, nah, push the drivers away. Jumps into the Land Rover. Give us the keys. And he drove just Prince Philip and the Queen.
Elizabeth.
And he drove them both to the opening ceremony for this carriage driving competition.
Oh, my God.
That is pretty precious cargo that he's got.
What's he having bodyguards for if you let him drive her around?
Well, who's going to say no to him? Who
no
is going to? No one.
He loves to drive. It's one of his things. I've seen him interviewed before, and he just loves driving. He drives around the grounds. He drives around the streets if he gets a chance. It's the whole bit. He's 96 years old, just out of hospital, driving the world's richest woman in a car. Uh-huh. He's incredible. So,
that's a classic case of kids not jumping in and saying, "Dad, give
that's
us the
enough.
Keys. That's enough. You've been driving, mate. You're going to crash the car with mum in it, and just because they're the royal family, just because he knows that Prince Philip will say, well, you're not going to be king. I'm going to give it to Prince William now.
Anyway. Leave it alone. Yeah. So who is the oldest driver that people know? Well, your mother is?
My mum turns 82 next Sunday, and she's a grey nomad, but she goes on her own. She works in remote Aboriginal communities up in the Northern Territory.
What?
She drives herself in her camper van.
Thousands of kilometres.
From Sydney. The furthest she's gone is Broome, but she also goes out to Alice Springs. And it's
she drives on her own?
Yep.
Whoa.
And she does it every year. And then she parks a van up there. She'll come back and do things. So she's back at the moment because she's come back.
Automatic
for
or manual?
No, manual. And
it's a manual.
It's a manual.
Wow. All right, she
and
can drive.
She's got a van on the back, which she has to manually wind up. So
no
it
hydraulics.
Sits on the, no hydraulics.
Jeez.
So, okay, 82 we're sitting at. So
okay,
let's see who can beat it.
Paul from Kashmir, who is the oldest driver you know?
My dad. He's 93.
Automatic or manual?
Oh, only manuals. He reckons that's the biggest problem. People can't drive a manual. They shouldn't have a license, he reckons.
Bloody oath. Right, I'll take that. I love your old man. 93.
So
and
where
he
does
goes
he drive?
All right.
He's a great driver. He goes up every day to see mum. She's in full-time care. He couldn't look after her anymore.
Yeah.
So every day he drives up and sees her, and he goes and does his own shopping, his own cooking.
Jesus.
Still looks after himself, makes heaps of wood stuff. But, yeah, very good driver. I'd rather be with him than some of my nieces, I can tell you.
Thanks, Paul.
93, what a man.
Lou's from Everton Park. Lou, who is the oldest driver you know?
Hey, guys. Yeah, that would be the 97-year-old man in his automatic Camry Avalon who drove over the top of my red motorbike.
Okay.
Let's go through the details of this recent case.
Okay.
Lou? Yeah, so parking with a whole heap of other motorcyclists, my bright red 500 sitting there. He's gone over the top of two parking spots and taken out my motorbike and gone over the top of it.
When was this, Lou?
This was probably about 2 years ago.
And did you get the money back, Lou? Did you get insurance?
My bike was totally written off, so everything had to be replaced. And when I finally found out how old he was, I wasn't surprised. 97.
Yeah.
97, right. Just for Robin's sake, was he driving an automatic or a manual?
Automatic.
Interesting.
Okay,
this is interesting, Lou.
I have no problem with a 97-year-old being made to drive a manual, let me just say.
Yeah.
And Jeff is...
you do understand what I'm saying. If that was a manual, it would have conked out before it ran over poor old Lou's motorbike.
That's why I make my sons learn on a manual license.
That's right.
Let's go to Jace from Robina. Jason, who is the oldest driver you know, buddy?
Wife's grandfather, Seth, he's 99. Still drives to Audi. drives to Audi. Around the property. Oh, he's unbelievable for 99.
Why are you going to Aldi? Like, really, you're 99.
Excuse
why
me?
Do you need bargains?
Yeah, the middle aisle, mate.
The uncle rang us last week in all hysterics because Seth was on the roof of his house at 99 doing the gutters.
Seth. Of course his name's Seth.
Seth, get down.
Hey, Mardo, guess how he got up there? He stood in the back. In the bucket of his backo and used two ropes to control the levers to get himself up onto the roof.
That could be the greatest story ever. Oh, my God. That's beautiful. All right, automatic or manual, I better ask just for research.
It's a really old Falcon. It's an auto.
Oh,
I want to talk to Seth.
I want to speak to Seth. Seth sounds like our kind of guy.
Can you just hang on, Jace, because we might get a number for Seth. Do you reckon he'd be up for having a chat?
Yeah, for sure. He has a little bit of trouble with the hearing, but...
Jace, is he around Brizzy? Is he in Brizzy somewhere?
No, he's actually at Kellyville in Sydney, out near Dural.
Right.
I want to get
what
in the bucket of that excavator.
Yeah, see how high he can get. Thanks, Jace.
Warning, the following segment contains serious, sexy talk and music from Kenny G. Between the Sheets with Robin Bailey.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I have taken it as my personal mission in my life to find as many surveys about this stuff so that we can all educate each other. And this one is my favourite so far because it comes for the Australian Women's Weekly. Now, this wholesome magazine doing a sex survey just makes it seem a little bit more wholesome. Anyway, they surveyed 1,340 women who were willing to fill out this survey completely anonymously, and the results, some of which are as follows. 8.3 is the average number of sexual partners in a woman's lifetime.
Yeah, triple that.
Triple.
Yeah, look, I would say that men double theirs and women halve their number.
Okay, that's interesting. So
you reckon women only halve them. So you're saying 17 a year, 17 a lifetime.
A lifetime. I reckon that women want to think that we've had less and men want to think you've had more.
Is that Bill Clinton? Like, at what stage does that, is that a passion dash? Does that, doesn't count, does it?
No. We're talking gone naked. Naked.
Wow. I don't know.
Okay, hold on to that fact.
Nice to hear.
17% have had a same-sex experience.
Yeah, see, this is where I get this annoyed at the figures, because girls do that thing where they're like, I would turn gay for Angelina Jolie. And you go, really? Would you? You'd get nude with her and do all the stuff. And they, I wouldn't do
okay,
that.
Okay, but this is,
I mean, I watch Orange is the New Black. Does that count?
No. 17% of these women have said they have had a same-sex experience. They haven't said they talk about it. They've said they've done it.
No, lies.
Okay. You're not going to believe it unless it's proven in
front of
you.
I
know where you're going. Yeah. Okay, 19% have had sex with someone they have met online.
That's new.
So one in five women. There you go. Here we go. 49% of women have said they faked it.
Yeah.
That's half of us.
95. I think that's a dyslexic 94%, I think, not 49.
Yeah, now I'm going with the 94 too. Anyway, the number one fact, which I have found completely gobsmacking from this survey, wait for it. What is the average number of dates do you think these women will have gone on before they're willing to get naked with
two,
a new
two
partner?
Two and a half.
Yeah,
three. Ed? Halfway through the third one, the clothes are off.
Three.
Three, Brendo?
Well, three, that's the rule, isn't it? That's the historic
rule.
Okay,
wait for this number.
Blokes haven't got time to wait after three.
Wait for this number, right? 17.
Oh, sorry.
17.
Wait. Is this a church survey? What are you running
here? No. I was thinking about this because I think if they're doing it online or it's through Tinder, they would include every single one of those interactions. Well, how else would it be 17?
That does seem like a lot.
That's just absurd.
Unless it's a workmate, that's what, deep into the fourth week at work.
What, that's every day?
I see what you mean. Work drinks.
I've been at work for 16 days in a row. I saw that bloke and next thing you know, I had the clothes off. Yeah.
Sorry, did we learn something, boys?
Yeah, liars.
We already knew
they're
that.
They're fun. They're here.
Sunday, just after lunchtime. Let's get ready to rumble! Suncorp Stadium, first time. They reckon 55. They're saying maybe 60,000 tickets. Horn versus Pacquiao. Who we got on the line, Robin?
We have the one and only Jeff Horn. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, my name is Robin. How are you going?
Good, mate. Hornet, how is the training preparation? What does this week entail? Only 5 days until the fight. Where do you sit with your training?
Yeah, so all the hard training, all the real hard work anyway is done, where I was doing about 30 rounds a session. So I'm starting to taper down to get my body rested before the big day.
Let's talk the scientific side. So weigh-in will be, is it Saturday or Friday? And what do you need to weigh in at? And then what happens?
Yeah, so weigh-in is on Saturday, and I'll be prepping for that to get down to the weight I need to be Friday. I'm weighing about 71 kilos at the moment, and I've got to get down to 66.7 kilos.
Okay. Yeah, you get down to that, but can't you then get back up before the fight starts?
Yes, WBO doesn't have a weight restriction to what you're allowed to come in after, but sometimes it's 10 pounds, but this one I can be whatever I want.
Can we talk about Pacquiao? Because he's turned up with 200 people and apparently his own chefs. I mean, is it legit that they're frightened that someone's going to poison them? Like, what is that?
Yeah, that is something that you do worry about. Like, I worry about that with leaving water bottles and things around the place. You're always concerned about, you know, someone could easily drop something in it, and then you get a drug test and you're like, well, oh, I didn't have anything. But
Hornet, I'm looking at Robin's face just so you remember the big Sydney guy. I think his name was Brown. His last name was Brown. He fought Klitschko.
Lucas Brown.
Lucas Brown fought Klitschko, almost beat him. But then they said, oh, you got drugs. So he said, well, I've never taken anything in my life. Someone may have snuck him something.
Who would do that?
Yeah, it's really gambling. Hard, especially if you're in another country, and someone's put a lot of money on you. Scary sometimes.
Jeff, the fight is at Suncorp Stadium. They're saying over 50,000 people are going to be there. Does fighting in front of a crowd make a difference to the way you perform?
Being in the middle of that, knowing that's for you, I guess, that will be the difference, because I've been to games there before where, like, the Origin games were packed out and they're all cheering. But if I'm in the middle of all that and they're all cheering for me, it's going to be like, wow, this is unbelievable.
Jeff, can you win?
If I didn't say I could, I'd lost before I'd even got in there, because that's what boxing is about. Half of it's just the mental game before you get in there.
Can we talk about, because when you came in here, one of the things that I got so offended on your behalf is about how much money Pacquiao is making and how you don't seem to be able to get that sort of cash, even though at the end of the day, it's just both of you in a ring fighting it out together on an even keel.
Yeah, but he's the world champion, I guess. So he's done it all before. He's got the big name. So he's the one probably drawing majority of the crowd for this fight. I guess because it is in Queensland, Australia, we're getting a lot of people to come to see me as well, but yeah.
So you're okay with the difference? It doesn't bother you that much?
No, because I'm hoping that's going to be me after this fight.
Yeah, that's okay. The one.
I'll stop being outraged on your behalf then, because it just seemed very unfair to me.
I heard a story you might get a bonus on your normal wage because of the number of people.
That does help. If more people watch it, if more people come to the event, I do get a bonus if that does happen.
Now,
so,
Jeff,
everyone, please come and please watch.
Absolutely. Pacquiao versus Hornet is the Battle of Brisbane live and exclusive on Foxtel's main event from 11 o'clock this Sunday. Going to be epic.
Jeff Horn, it is the fight of the century. Mate, go well. We are all right behind you.
Thanks,
see,
mate.
See you guys. Bye.
We've been banging on about this for ages, but finally we got some backup. We've been saying that Brisbane needs a second team, and every time we get told, no, they're not going to introduce another team into the competition, it'll have to be one of the existing clubs. None of the existing clubs want to move.
Of course
anyway.
Not.
They want to stay
got
where they
tradition
are.
Tradition and
okay.
Fan bases.
I've got to get
so
my head around all this, but with the new grants and everything, with the new TV deal of the NRL, they're going, righto, there's your money. Next time you go broke, we are not lending you any money to bail you out, because that's what they've been doing over the years. And as I said, I think St. George owes $6 million at the moment. They pay that back. No one will ever be given any money. You're all on your own. So next time you go broke, you're going to have to move.
Okay.
Well, 6,000 people were out at Campbelltown last weekend. West Tigers have to be in the sights. The other one I want to throw at you is the Melbourne Storm. They're doing Melbourne. They're not doing anything. They're not pushing any further inroads. They're averaging 11,000 people. Why don't they just move to Brisbane?
Because Molly Meldrum is their number one supporter.
She's still alive?
He may not know if they move. No. Josh Masood is Channel 7's Chief Rugby League reporter. Morning, mate.
G'day, guys.
What's the story down there? Like, we all want it up here because we'd love to have a second team, and we know they'd go well and the league wants it. What's stopping things?
Well, I want it more than anyone, because I get to go to Brisbane more often and not have the stupid lockout laws in Sydney and actually have a good time.
Yes,
but,
that's true.
Look, I think basically what's happened with this one, everyone should sort of calm down a little bit. It's a slow news week in between Origins, and the journalist has jumped onto what is a pretty good lightning rod for debate, but it's based on absolutely zero reality. There's absolutely no intention for the NRL to move a team at this stage. They're actually about to offer all 16 current clubs licenses in perpetuity, so that means basically forever.
Josh, just a question there.
That's ridiculous.
That is madness. Why would you allow organisations that can't run themselves and have proven that time and time again a blank canvas to continue forever? That's mad.
Well, they can continue forever for as long as you said before, they can remain financially viable.
But they're not. They've already proved that they can't.
Well, what has happened previously, the licences have been 5-year licences, 3-year licences and whatnot, and then it was sort of up for grabs after that, and that's when we've seen expansion in the past.
But the NRL is on its knees to the point where there are rumblings of a rebel competition if they don't get the salary cap and so on and so forth, that they're willing to offer them indefinite licences this time round. Jeez. However, the game itself is in such a terrible financial state, it actually needs a $30 million bank loan
what?
To make ends meet this year.
How can that be possible?
Oh, because because of some of the things you've already mentioned. It's probably chucked in around $25 million to keep three clubs afloat in the last 3 years, the other two being the Knights and the Titans, as well as St. George Illawarra.
Do we need the Warriors? Are they costing as much money?
No, the Warriors actually make the game money through the TV rights in New Zealand and Melbourne as well are very vital to a strong TV deal because I think if you got rid of Melbourne, you'd have to take the N out of NRL, which means national.
Okay. Can you tell me, who are the top five earning clubs? The Broncos, you're saying the Warriors?
Cowboys.
The Broncos, Daylight, and Daylight, pretty much.
Okay. Cowboys?
The Broncos, far and away, they're a publicly listed company. Yeah. The Sydney Roosters are very strong because they've basically got the upper crust of Sydney's wealth running them. The North Queensland Cowboys are extremely strong. Again, a very strong property developer runs that club. South Sydney with James Packer and Russell Crowe, obviously very strong too. And then the Canterbury Bulldogs, they have a very strong leagues club behind them. So those five clubs stand out. And if they want a player, those clubs, they tend to get one because they've got access to so many third-party deals and good corporate relationships. Uh-huh. And then it's a real have and have not situation with your West Tigers, your Newcastles and your Gold Coast down the other end. And the salary cap basically equalises it.
Okay, Josh Masu, Channel 7's Chief Rugby League reporter. Why wouldn't they just go, thanks for your time. No, mate, you know what it's like in Sydney. Balmain used to be the working class hub. Now you can't buy a house there for less than $1 zillion. It's basically Carl Stefanovic's the only bloke that can afford a flat there. Put his girlfriend
in. How many people are from Leichhardt? Like they're all blow-ins. Why do we need the West Tigers?
But I could turn it around and say, how many people are from Collingwood? Or how many people are from Melbourne or North Melbourne with the AFL model? None of them.
But they still don't want to.
But it's different. The whole of Victoria and Melbourne is obsessed with that sport. That's not the case in Sydney anymore.
Oh, I think if you look at the TV ratings, you'd say that. But rugby league has never translated to actual crowds at the ground. It would still disaffect a lot of people. The game went through a lot of pain only 20 years ago to merge all these teams, and the Tigers, they were one of the entities that went through that pain, two foundation clubs having to come together. So you're going to defect two whole generations of people who supported either Magpies or Tigers by getting rid of them.
So, Josh, it doesn't matter to their bottom line how many people go and watch them at the footy. They get so much money from the NRL, they could play in empty stadiums because the TV deal's worth so much, yeah?
That's right, and that's why they get empty stadiums. It's a chicken and the egg because the scheduling is so bad. I mean, you talk about house prices in Sydney, the only worst thing is the traffic. And when you're scheduling games at 6 o'clock on a Friday afternoon Sydney,
good call.
They give people no chance to go to the stadium. So all they care about is the TV ratings. But I think the fans can cop it. If their own club is financially irresponsible and sends itself broke, then they've got no one else to blame but their own club. However, if the NRL embarks on some survivor-type situation and culls them without consultation, I don't think people are going to cop that.
Josh Masu, Channel 7's Chief Rugby League Reporter. In depth as always. Thanks, mate.
All good, guys. Anytime.
Okay, you guys were chatting to each other and you were comparing notes off air yesterday about tattoos. And I said, we got to talk about this on air because I was fascinated with both of the examples that you had.
Okay, so if I'm going to throw a potentially obscure name at you both because I don't think you'll know who this bloke is, although my kids do, Cody Simpson.
Yeah, I'm onto him.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, Gold Coast Justin Bieber.
Yes. Okay.
He was about 14 or 15 when they signed him, and I don't know what music he does, but he went over there. Took the whole family over to LA, didn't he?
Cody Simpson. He starts off his music with his own name, as they do.
Does he?
Yeah. And I'll tell you the other thing that's really impressive about Cody Simpson is when my eldest son, who's now 17, when he was in primary school, he used to be a really good swimmer, and he'd end up at the state titles, and Cody Simpson held the Queensland record for butterfly for something like 6 or 7 years.
Already had the record, not swimming.
But it's been held. It has still. I mean, I don't know if it has now. But
any songs about butterfly or swimming?
No, not that I've seen. Anyway, the reason why I'm giving you all of this context is that he lives in LA now, and his family, as you said, went over with him. But he's just decided to get a brand new tattoo.
And what is it?
And it infuriated me so badly. No, it's a heart with an arrow through it, which is fairly traditional. And then in the centre of the heart, he's written mum.
That's nice. Traditional sailor tattoo.
It's not nice. Why would you write mum? Everyone's got one. But why wouldn't you write your mum's name? Why wouldn't you do something significant? Why would
you just
write
Mum? They're from the Gold Coast. You probably can't spell his mum's name.
That's true. How did he spell it?
Um,
because he's Australian.
Not mom.
Yeah,
no,
good.
No, M-U-M.
Oh, that's all right. Better than Chappelle. Is that his mum's name? No. I'm not sure.
Beautiful story.
No, it's not. I don't know why that infuriated me. I am going to look up his mum's name. Anyway, and you have another tattoo.
I like that tattoo.
What, the mum?
Yeah.
Oh, what a waste of a piece of really good ink and arm.
All right, I'll give you one. Yeah. This came through on my Facebook and I thought, wow, this is, I don't know if it's the worst or the best. This guy has got, I'll tell you in a second why I knew it was a guy. It is just a photo of the upper thigh here, right, really high on the inside of the thigh, okay? Yeah. It was a boxer.
So
you
painful.
Know boxers, when they're not doing the heavy bag, they're doing the speedball, this one?
Oh, yeah, speedball. Jeff Horn's been doing that.
And then I realised what I was looking at was a pair of men's testicles, like I didn't know.
Oh,
so it had the boxer just about, its fists were just about on the guy didn't have any undies on. And
that's fantastic.
Brilliant.
That's fantastic.
Brilliant.
Until I realised what I was looking at and I went, oh, yeah, that's disgusting.
To get the full impact, he has to be naked.
Yeah, can you imagine
He just lifts up the shorts. Look at this.
Yep.
Yeah, but you've got to take your pants down for the full impact. Because the other goes, oh, you got a boxer. And then you go, hold on. Oh, you've got the bag.
And he jiggles a bit.
And it looks like the boxer is punching the bag.
Oh, that is ridiculous.
So we were going to talk about the worst tattoos you've seen. Have we?
That sounds like the best.
Yeah, I think we've got
the mum one.
Well, her name is Angie Simpson.
Angie Simpson?
Yeah, Cody's mum.
What is the best tattoo you've seen? Please don't nominate yourself I got me birth date done in Roman numerals on that because that's what NRL footballers do and it looks awful. So what we want is creative, fun tattoos. Let's not forget these are pictures on your body, and I know that a lot of them are very significant to people and it can be. But what are some fun ones as well? The best tattoos you've seen. If you want to dob yourself in, you can, but it's going to be a very high bar if you're dobbing yourself
in. If yours tell a story, like that boxer in the bag, that's magnificent. Good. Speed work. Matt from Wellington Point.
I've got thongs tattooed on my feet.
It's fantastic, Matt. It's a classic. And have you gone the...
Have you the top, or what
do you got?
Well, I played a gig at a pub out at Ipswich Way once, and I didn't wear shoes, and the lady behind the bar... thought I had thongs on for the whole time I played, so I didn't get kicked out.
Wonderful. So you go through life with bare feet on?
Yeah, I drive a truck for a living, so I live in thongs anyway. So I just don't wear these ones in the truck stop showers.
Okay, so do your real thongs match your other thongs? Like your thongs on your feet?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they hide underneath, but if I take them off, it still looks like I've got the same thong. Wow.
Green or blue preference, Matt? What colour's the tat?
No, they're black. They're just a black and white pluggers.
They're the dress thong. They're the dress thong.
You need to get your fingers to make that flicking noise every step you take. definitely got thongs on.
Well played, Matt. Lovely. Chris is from Carindale. Chris, what is a nice tattoo, an inventive tattoo. What is it, buddy?
Yeah, years ago, I met some woman that had a tattoo of a stick man pushing a lawnmower on one side just above the nether regions, and on the other side was a sign which said, keep off the grass, and the nether regions, the accoutrements to the nether regions were dyed bright green. So it looked like a lovely strip of lawn.
Wow.
Dyed bright green to complete the effect, Chris.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't understand this. Like, do you think it's funny?
Yeah, that's hilarious.
Yeah, it is.
That's really funny.
That is a good one.
But you would have seen it.
It was an icebreaker.
Chris, you would have seen
it. Check this out.
Do you reckon she did it in public or you had to get home and do it in private? Have a look.
It was special time.
Special times.
Yeah, special times. Yeah.
Green special time.
Chris, thank you very much. You've inspired all of us. Rachel's from Everton. Rachel.
Hey, how you going?
We're talking inventive tattoos, Rach.
Yeah, here's a really inventive one. So my son
showed me this tiny little picture and said, that's what he's getting on there. And I said, you be careful where you put that because it's for life. And next thing, about a month later, he undoes his shirt and he's got a picture of himself as a caricature right across his chest, driving a big Chevy with his tongue out and his hair all crazy.
Right. We did ask for clever ones to tell a story. What story is this telling to you, to us, Rachel?
Oh, gosh, it was the funniest thing. I could not stop laughing. I still can't.
So, is he happy with it? Does he like it?
Oh, he loves it. He thinks it's fantastic, but it just seems so funny to put a picture of yourself on yourself.
He loves it.
Is he in a relationship, Rachel?
No.
It could take a while.
It could take a long while.
Have you explained to him the concept of being 60 one day, Rach?
Beg your pardon?
What happens when he gets to 60? How's he going to explain that away?
Look, since then he's absolutely covered in all sorts of things, so I don't think it really.
Oh, no, once you've done that, Rach, it's fair game. You can put anything on your body after you've gone the caricature of yourself.
That's fair. Chest.
Driving a Chevy with your tongue poking out.
If you have any other clever, funny ones, then email us some pictures or send us some pictures on Facebook.
Pictures.
Triple M Brisbane will put up
for
a...
For feeder, we don't want to hear from you, mate.
No, a portfolio of the best ones after the show. It is Marto, Ed and Robin.
One of my kids, who I won't say which one, had got himself into a bit of strife in the school holidays and hadn't been completely honest with me. So the consequence in my family when that sort of stuff happens is the one thing they care about, which is their electronics and their phones.
But where was he?
Well, he was supposed to be...
Where was he when you went and took his phone off him?
Oh, well, he was at a movie.
He's trying to watch a movie.
Yeah, and I got a call from another mother to say that where I thought he was where he wasn't. So I texted him straight away and said, mate, you need to come outside. I'm picking you up. We're going to have a conversation.
So you didn't let him finish his movie?
No, I didn't.
What movie was it?
Transformers.
Oh, you've helped him out.
We know how that turned out.
Anyway, I was just saying to these guys, I was kind of saying, oh, you know, this is what happened and I'm, you know, school holidays, tra-da-ta-da-ta-da. Anyway, when he got in the car, I took his phone off him and then later I was going through and I'm thinking, well, where was he? And I was looking at his Snapchat and you took mild offence to that, Greg Martin, because you were saying that you don't think you should do that.
I don't think you should look through your kids' phones. I think trust is a huge thing. Maybe... I don't know.
No, no, no.
Maybe
come
I can
on.
Trust
very...
my children and you can't trust yours.
Well, no, but I think that kids make mistakes. What's your first rule to me of boys? Seriously, I quote it to every human I meet. Boys are stupid.
Don't overestimate them. They're stupid.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So if that's the case and I need to find out the stuff, he lost my respect and therefore my trust.
Yeah,
so
I still don't reckon you should look at your kids' phones.
Really?
Let's put it out there. Yeah. Let's get straight to it.
Maybe didn't have them old enough. Maybe you've been doing it since they were 10 or 11. When did they get a phone?
It's an excellent question because it's a new world of parenting. And Marto, I think we are actually seeing that your kids are a couple of years older than Robin's. Yeah. Even that, I believe, that age gap is enough for there to
be a difference of opinion. Yeah.
So let's go to the phones. 133-53, do you look at your kids' phones?
Would you have liked your parents to look at your diary?
No, and my mum didn't, and I used to have one. But I also think that if there's a level of trust there and you break that trust, and the other thing, Marto, I reckon a lot of parents are super naive of what their kids are getting up to. And when you check that out, what I do with him, with all my boys normally, is I sit them down beside me and I say, show me what you've just put up. What have you liked on Facebook or what have you done on Snapchat? Because it's the only way to see, and they're there, to see what they're up to.
How boring is it?
Man, fairly inane conversations.
That's the biggest thing. Yeah.
Do you look at your kids' phones with or without their permission, with or without them?
But is that what you'll do, Ed? Because you are definitely having a child of this new iChild generation.
I'm hoping by that stage you've just got the microchip and I just download it direct to my own phone.
Hey, when do you stop looking? When you stop paying for their phone?
Pretty much. I think so. Okay. If I ever have any say in it, absolutely.
All right, you go in a nursing home when you're 82.
Yeah.
Can they check on your phone?
If I'm dribbling in a corner,
yeah, it doesn't matter.
Go for it. How many cat videos do you think they'll want to watch?
It seems to be an intrude. Are you allowed to intrude on your kids' privacy?
Alison's from Jimboomba. What do you reckon, Alison? Is it okay?
Yeah, the way Robin did it, definitely. I mean, it's trust and it goes both ways. And she trusted her son to be where he told her that he would be, and he wasn't. So he has to now earn that trust back.
Have you done it, Alison?
Yes, I've got a 14-year-old, and both me and my husband go through his phone, his tablet, his laptop. There's some things I wish I never saw.
Like what? Like what? Like what?
Cartoon porn is not a lovely thing, let me just say.
Jeez.
Well,
okay.
Okay, leave it there.
But you, I do what you do, Robin. I sit down with him and we explain why we're doing this. I mean, that's he goes good. On chat rooms and he doesn't know who he's talking to.
No, it's
that's
true.
That's the other thing, Jellison. Yeah. That is the other thing. The who danger. Are these kids talking to? Thank yeah. you.
And they're so desensitized to all of this stuff. Mm. Like, it's just these images that keep appearing. Anyway, Rowan of Nudgee, what do you reckon?
Good morning, guys. Look, I reckon you should absolutely be checking your kid's phone. With my son's phone, as far as I'm concerned, it's in my name. I pay for it. Therefore, it's my phone. And, you know, I should be entitled to check it. Moreover, it is. It's about keeping them safe. It's not like reading a diary. That's personal thoughts. It's just a communication device, and you need to know who's talking to your children, what they've been exposed to. My best mate worked with Child Protection with the Queensland Police Service for several years.
ELT,
and he's adamant on this stuff. Yeah. You know, it's not about not trusting your kids. It's about whether or not you trust every single person they come in contact with.
Yeah, and the chat rooms they end up in. And you know what? They just have no idea. Like, seriously, Marty, you were right the first time. They're just stupid because they don't have life experience. Anyway, Rhiannon and Narangba.
What age do you stop checking your kid's phone? There's a question.
I think when they pay for
it. Rhiannon, when do you stop checking kids' phone?
When do you stop checking them?
Yeah.
That's just dependent on the child, really.
Righto. Well, what do you know about it? But,
well, I work in child and youth welfare, and my stance on it, and I advise anyone with teenage kids or preteens, because they're getting phones nowadays as well, if you're concerned about their safety, so if they're doing things like, if they're going to places that you don't know about, if, you know, drugs or alcohol might be getting involved, if they're telling lies consistently about where they are, who they're hanging out with, that sort of thing, it comes down to protecting their safety, and absolutely check their phone and do it on a regular basis. Because some of the previous callers were saying, you don't know who they're coming into contact with or the situations they're getting themselves into. But I think on like a day-to-day basis, I don't know if it's necessary to be checking their phones all the time. But, yeah, if you're noticing, like, some changes in their behaviour or, like I said, if they're going off and they're missing for hours and that sort of stuff, then absolutely you do need to be keeping an eye on it.
Fair enough. Thank you.
Good advice.
But, man, you've got to be right. Like, you do lose some brain cells sometimes when you have a look. Their use of emojis is so creative.
Or it's not.
Hey,
did you see the NFL yesterday? Yeah. It's off-season and there's a lot of signings and all the rest of it. They're all training and doing their pre-season. Did you see that Derek Carr, who's the Oakland Raiders? Now, where is Oakland? It's above LA, is it?
Yeah, it's around the LA area, and it's where the Golden State Warriors sort of play half their games as well. It's traditionally been an area that's had sort of mixed fortunes. You know what I mean? It was the industrial hub of LA, and it sort of hasn't. It's sort of half been gentrified, half not, and it's always sort of fighting with itself about what its identity is, which is why, Robin, someone basically said, I own an NFL team, which is worth $2, $3 billion. I might move the whole thing to Las Vegas, which is what they're doing with the Raiders in a couple of years.
They're going to end up in Las Vegas. Well, that figures. Well, they just signed, you know, their quarterback, and he has been there for a while.
He's an excellent player.
Yeah, he is good. Derek Carr, and he had an injury earlier this year, and they went, without him, we're not very good. So they've just signed him to this enormous extension. Now, you know how we go, you open up the back page of the Courier Mail or the Daily Telegraph and go, wow, so-and-so's going to get nearly $1 million. Lance Franklin gets $1 million. And we go, wow, that's big. That's amazing. Israel Folau, $1 million.
Mm.
That seems to be our ceiling. Right, they push theirs to just past where it had previously been before. Like, they get sign-on, you know, fees, and then they get little bonuses for this, little bonus for that. They've just made an extension, the greatest extension ever in NFL. $125 million over 5 years. Do you want me to do the maths? That's $25 million a year this guy gets.
Derek Carr.
How much is that? Because this is the other weird thing in the NFL, where they always tell you the contract.
Yeah.
And then the next thing they say, and such of that is guaranteed. They some of these people don't have guaranteed contracts, but he would have over there. But he's as, you know,
I think $80 million or so was guaranteed, and then there was bonuses.
Wow.
So he could end up with $30 million a year.
That's ridiculous.
Who's absolutely certain? And you go, another one of those dickhead American athletes who are carrying on and all the rest of it. He sat in front of the press, and I'd never heard him talk before. I'd just seen, you know, you see highlights on American sports shows. You go, wow, he's got a good arm. He sat there, and they said, you know, what are you going to do with the money?
Chick-fil-A, probably Chick-fil-A. I've been eating clean, Lad. We got Lad here. He's been having me eat clean. I'll probably get some Chick-fil-A.
I've never been to the States. What does that mean? He said he's going to go out and have Chick-fil-A.
Yeah. He basically said that he was going to Hungry Jack's.
It's the dirty bird of California.
But, is it? Oh, is it a low class? It's not a high class.
Well, it's a takeaway joint.
Oh, my God.
But it somehow has maintained this very weird... That's why I was finding hard to have a comparable here in Australia.
Yeah.
Because it's got this weird... people are fanatical. If there's a Chick-fil-A and there'll be people lining up, or anyone you want to go to, they will be lining up out the door as it opens. And then it will just be constant the whole day. And you know why?
Why?
It is delicious.
Oh, there we go.
There's a lot of fat and oil. Have you got a photo? You're one of the great Googlers I've ever seen.
I am. I'm really good. I get really curious. It looks good. It looks relatively healthy. Actually, it just looks like a chicken burger.
It just looks like any chicken burger that I've ever seen in my life.
It looks like a piece of chicken in a bagel.
Okay.
There you go.
So that's what you do when you're rich. So why do we bother chasing riches, everyone? Don't worry about it. Because also, this is why else I like this guy. Listen to, he wants to buy his wife something. He said he's going to give a lot of the money to charities. He's a Christian. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of money to charities in America and overseas. Good on him. And then he talked about his wife. He said she doesn't want anything, but he come on.
I'll probably give my wife something nice, you know, even though she begs me not to. She still gets coupons. Ever since I've known her, she finds coupons. She gets online trying to find discounts and all those things, and none of that's going to change.
Robin, you're making $25 million a year. You're still a dirty coupon cutter?
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. If that's who you are, then that's who you are.
There's a coupon here. There's a coupon here from Maserati.
There you go. No. It's like Jodie Foster. Jodie Foster has lived in the same house for her entire
family.
You know, so
Warren Buffett, the world's second or third, America's second richest man, still lives in his original house, drives his old car.
Because that's who they are. That's how they were brought up. That's what they care about. And look, as someone like me, who is a massive, massive bargain shopper, there is something like, it's like an aphrodisiac. It's like it's something that just
is
so, it's an absolute win. It is so compelling. It gives you a natural high. And I would suggest that in the States, for her, that's coupons.
Dirty coupon cutters.
People really need to start thinking about a drug habit. Do you know what I mean?
No.
Like, if coupons are your thing, it's time.
What, heroin or coupon?
It's time to start thinking about the joys.
Imagine
of
if we had a rehab unit for people with coupon cutters. Put those scissors away.
No. As part of like the AA franchise, you bet. As part of the AA franchise that is in the States, you can go to AA for a whole number of addictions, and one of those things is
coupon cutting.
Yeah, I've seen it. There's a reality television show about coupons, and there are people that have to go to AA because they become so obsessed.
Oh, that's it.
They don't sleep.
Yep, I've heard everything. That's it.
Book yourself in. Marto, Ed and Robin to the new Triple M.
Had a tough day yesterday. It was really tough.
School holidays?
Oh, no, actually a genuinely tough day as opposed to a whingy, whiny mother moment day. I have a rescue greyhound. I have two dogs, a Doberman Cross New Zealand Hunterway, who is the RSPCA's longest serving resident and is now very much ensconced in our home, and a rescue greyhound that I've had for about 6 years, who was saved as a puppy because she was a breeding dog and got trodden on. And so a vet saved her life and we got her. And she was absolutely a wonderful dog, particularly after my husband Tony died 3 years ago. Summer, the greyhound really helped my youngest son. In terms of him getting over his dad, not that you ever get over it, but he just, the Summer assisted Piper a lot.
Nice one.
Anyway, her leg's been really bad for a long time and she's been in a lot of pain, particularly over winter. And also in that time, she's come really agitated and has been really distracted. And I guess the greyhoundness of her has taken over and had taken to killing things. And it got to the point, I was telling you guys last week that she brought a possum into the house, and that's not been the only thing that she's gone after. Anyway, a decision was made yesterday that we needed to put her down.
Oh.
So I
that sort of day. That's
yeah,
horrible.
It was really awful. Although I will say this, I took her back to the vet who had originally saved her life, and I was allowed to. They gave me the option of being in the room with her, and they gave her the green dream. And you know, it's tough with greyhounds because it's very difficult to find veins. They're so thin, and it did take a couple of goes. But she with me
did
looking
you stay in there?
Yeah, with me looking into her eyes and just talking to her. Yeah, we put her to sleep, and then bless them, the wonderful vets out at Greenbank fur babies, I think it's called. Anyway, yeah, then they said, look, do you want to take her? And I said no, and they were able to, you know, I think they're going to cremate her, and we probably will scatter her ashes. But I have to say, and you know, and sadly in my life I've had a lot to do with death. It's the most peaceful way. Honestly, it just made me sit there and go, why don't we do that for people?
Oh, God, yeah, rather than let them slip away into dementia and
everything
else. Yeah,
all of that stuff. It took less than 10 seconds, and she was just looking into my eyes, and I was kind of just talking to her and patting her, and then that was it. And I was very unsure about whether I wanted to be in there, but I just felt like I owed her that. So, you know,
good on you.
Yeah, but it's, have you ever done that? And it was weird because you actually, there is a moment where you see life leave the body.
Yeah, right.
Mm. And I don't know what happens to dogs. I don't know where they go. And the other thing that was really funny was because basically the green dream, I understand after yesterday, is just a big impact of anesthetic. Like it's just an overdose of anesthetic.
Oh, righto. Okay.
And as she started to slide down, she's a greyhound. So she started to, I don't know, chase rabbits.
One last run.
Yeah.
Oh, right. One last
her legs started
moment.
To
one
go.
Running her.
And then it overtook and off she went. But man, oh man, I've got to tell you, why we don't allow people to have that same respect is beyond me.
Yep. Thank you, Robin.
Marto, Ed and Robin. Oh, new Triple M.